Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Ted Santos, and I am your co-host of The Creative Alchemist, and we come to you every Sunday. I'm sorry, we come to you every Thursday live from 7 until 8, and we speak about business, your business needs. What are the things that make a business work? What are the challenges you face? We talk about leadership, money. We even talk about your health. And as always, we have a guest. But before we introduce the guest, you know I never fly this journey alone. I always have a co-pilot. And Lori, let them know you are here.
So hi, everyone. It's great to be speaking with you again back on our Thursday nights. And tonight's I'm Lori Miller, interior designer and business owner. So tonight we have a special guest who's overcome some challenges and is running a very successful business, does a lot of speaking engagements, although he tried to tell me that he was a little nervous tonight, so we'll give him some slack. Mark Berlin, and Mark, if you can tell us a little bit about your mission, what you do, how you help people, because I think that's huge, and how you actually created a business helping people. In a very, very difficult industry, I might add. So, Mark, you're on.
Thank you very much. Good evening. Mark Berlin, patient care advocate with On the Mark Patient Advocacy Services. Started this journey a couple of years ago. After my parents passed away, I was looking for something that I could find passion with and I had experience with and I was good at. And I found at a JCC, Oceanside, the Freeburg JCC, an organization called Pulse Center for Patient Safety Education Advocacy, was having a talk, conversations about questions to ask your doctor. And after that, to the woman, her name is Eileen Carina, who founded the organization, and she told me about a family-centered training advocacy course that she runs, and I took the two-day course, and it was at the right place at the right time. That I think I found something that I could really do well and flourish at, because not only do I have a healthcare background, a master's from George Washington University, I also was born with cerebral palsy and endured over 20 operations over the course of my lifetime. So it seems like a nice way to give back and help people on their journey.
So, Mark, you also encountered some other struggles a little bit later on in life, right? With mom?
Yes. Yes.
Do you want to talk about
mom,
for a minute?
Sure. I'll preface by saying mom was and dad was there for me for most of the surgeries that I had. But in 2015, actually 5 years ago this month, she was diagnosed with a glioblastoma brain tumor. And she was operated on a week later, thank goodness, at Memorial Sloan Kettering. And unfortunately, she succumbed to it in April of 2017. So it's very hard on myself, my sisters, my father. They were married close to 57 years. So it was a very big shock to the system.
Right. And, you know, it's hard enough navigating having a sick family member, but to navigate the healthcare system with a sick family member is a whole other challenge. So I don't know, Mark. So I guess most people don't know is I had my dad in the hospital last year, and we had to hire a patient advocate. So when I saw your history, to me, it was very interesting because obviously our patient advocate came through the hospital, and we had multiple challenges in terms of getting him the care he needed, getting him into sort of a hospice or home hospice situation. So I can only imagine the calls that you get now and, you know, I guess your experience of how you navigated the healthcare system with your mom is also what propelled you to kind of help other people.
Definitely. Absolutely. I think she was the one that was there for all of us. It not only for me during the course of my numerous surgeries, but for my father. She was there for him in when he had his heart attack, he was there. She was a better match than his sister and mother for his first kidney operation. He had two. in the operations, one in 99 and one in 2011, and also back surgery along the way. So she's been there for everyone.
Wow. So tell us a little bit how you propelled this into a business. How did you get started? What did you have to do? Are you an LLC? Are you an INC? Are you, I don't know, ASAP?
I am eventually going to be an LLC early next year. And I'm, you know, it helped with having organizations. One was the Alliance for Professional Health Advocates, which a network of other advocates belong to. And, you know, courses are given as well as advice on various topics. And I decided to focus on people who, particularly seniors, who want to remain safe at home but need some help because their family, their kids are not around. Or if they get a diagnosis and they experience something that I call the fudge theory, which is fear, uncertainty, doubt, guilt, and exhaustion. Because once you get that diagnosis or a certain condition, it's like a whirlwind and you don't know where to turn to. So you really need someone objective to help out in research, you know, take the patient, go with the family and the patient to make sure that they ask the right questions, make sure they're not overwhelmed, make sure there's no insurance barriers, make sure there's no barriers to access of care, whether it be home health, durable medical equipment, or any other care that they might need.
So
you're
Go ahead, Ted.
Go ahead, Lori.
No, I was going to say, what areas do you serve in terms of, like, the Manhattan area? Can you go in Chicago? I mean, we have listeners in Australia and all over the world. So I'm wondering if you'd be able to help them or if you could give pointers.
Well, right now with COVID-19, a lot of it work is done remotely and or via Zoom or FaceTime. So I can do a lot of work in that realm, especially with the family members. But mostly I'm on Long Island, and I service the tri-state area, Metro New York, parts of New Jersey and Connecticut, as well as off Long Island.
So would you be able
but
to help someone
people,
in
people
the
across
country?
The people across the country. I'm sorry?
Would you be able to help someone in another country?
Yeah. I have a website, and they could reach me through the website, or they and then we could talk on Zoom or by phone.
Very awesome.
What do you think makes you unique compared to others who do what you do?
Well, I'd say the experience that I've had, not only growing up with cerebral palsy and during numerous corrective surgical operations, but also having been through that challenge and been through the frustration and the obstacles of trying to get better and frustration of missing out, but then achieving success, going through the rehab, going through the therapy, and being independent.
So how old were you when you were diagnosed with cerebral palsy? How old were you?
6 months, I believe.
6 months?
My
young.
My parents noticed some issues, crawling issues and grabbing issues, and then I went to...
So this has been your entire life then?
It's in my entire life. I remember going to the doctors and neurologists. I'm sorry?
No, I was just going to say, I'm attempting to remember. I'm thinking, do I remember anything from when I was 6 months? So for your the memory of your entire life, you've dealt with some kind of obstacle, correct?
Yes, and I don't remember when I was that young. My parents told me the story, and I read it in the bio when I transferred to a certain doctor. So, no, I don't have that great of a memory like Mary Lou Henner.
Well, I was going to ask that. What happened when
you
were 8 months, right?
So.
I just remember being very young, and going to NYU, the neurology department, and having a battery of tests, and then having to have my first surgery at Long Island Jewish, tendon releases on both my right leg and my left hand. My right hand was, I think, I was in second or third grade. And then later on, at the end of fifth grade, I had to have an osteotomy on my hip because the hip bone broke. And unfortunately, that first one wasn't successful. So,
well, what was your mobility like from as far as you can remember?
Well, as I could remember, I remember being able to do things, but I know I didn't realize it was difficult. Like, I did it one way, but people saw me as different. I would walk with a slight limp.
Okay, so people saw you as different. Wow, so that can have an impact.
In grade school and camp, it was different. It was difficult. Not impossible, but difficult.
Okay, so technically you could say you were being faced with obstacles that the average child didn't have to deal with.
Correct.
Interesting. You were mentioning about your hip. Did that affect your attendance in school, having those kinds of operations?
Yes. Unfortunately, I was out of commission at home recuperating during school, 6th and 7th grade. The 6th grade, I had trying to recover from one procedure, and that when that didn't work, I had to have another one done, and that kept me out of school for 7th grade.
Ooh, wow. Did you like school? Some children in that age group don't like school.
I didn't love school. I didn't love it. But I definitely missed it.
You missed school. Interesting. And do you think that affected your social skills at all?
I think in a way. I think delayed especially. I think especially dating. I am going from a private challenge.
Okay. All right. Okay.
But I,
so
you know what,
lots of challenges. What do you think? So how do you think you were able to navigate through that and come out? Like, I mean, you sound very level-headed, right? You're intelligent.
Now.
What made you, was it easy? I mean, it seems like a stupid question to say, was it easy? But what do you think were the elements in your life or about you, your personality, that helped you navigate through those kinds of obstacles?
At which point? The surgeries or school?
Well,
college?
Missing school and then going back and feeling like you missed that. Like, you missed school, you missed out on some social development by not being there. What do you think helped you?
Yeah, I think my mother not working and being there, I think that was a big help, and being there for me, even when I transitioned back to school.
Really?
I think also being introduced to some people when I transitioned to high school helped as well.
What do you mean? What do you mean being introduced to people?
When I switched schools, some people from the private school switched to the public school. So I knew them and they introduced me to some people in the high school.
So
it made it a little bit easier.
So it sounds like you had some kind of support structure.
I did, and in every aspect of life, when I finished high school, when I started college, I went to grad school, and even every job, there was always some nervousness or apprehension about it. But somehow you have to believe that things will be okay and that we'll overcome and learn to be part of something.
And it sounds like what you also had a very good, caring support structure around you.
Yeah. My parents were there. My sisters were there.
At the time,
my grandparents.
Okay.
I'm sorry?
Lori, a question for you. I mean, Lori has worked in the prison system for years. Do you think that the lack of support structure is a common ground for people who are incarcerated?
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt, it's usually lacking.
So interesting. So, and So maybe we can note that in dealing with obstacles of any kind, so whether you're an entrepreneur, you're an employee, you're dealing with this pandemic, I mean, this a support structure is critical because on one end, you're dealing with huge challenges from as long as you can remember in your life, and then you have other people who have challenges, and one of the things that propels you, even though you had things, you know, school taking away, you had limited mobility, yet this, and I get that you had a certain, I'm assuming, a certain mindset that you said believing in yourself, but it sounds like you also had people around you who believed in you also.
Correct. I have to say that not only through the surgeries, but through every aspect challenges, particularly when I was in college and I took a year off to have a hefty procedure, a leg lengthening procedure that was done on me. But I was in a fraternity and I had to leave them for a year, but they kept in touch with me through from Washington, D.C., where I went to undergrad at American University. But all through the operations, they were there and kept in touch.
Wow, very cool. Interesting.
Yeah.
So a major element.
Go ahead, Ted. Sorry.
No. Go ahead. Go ahead, Lori. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think Mark also knows how to seek out support.
Okay.
And I'm sure that, you know, that's part of his advocacy, I guess, to help others because you know how to negotiate people to get what you need. You know, need or to have people believe in you.
Correct.
I don't know if you're conscious of that or if you do that purposely.
I wasn't until you just said it. But since college, I've been, you know, advocating to make sure I have the right group, the right friend support, and the right environment around me to succeed. In college, it was my fraternity, grad school. There was a student association, and even when my parents passed away, I sought out and found a great bereavement support group at the Friedberg JCC with myself and four other women, and it was great. We still keep in touch after 2 years.
That's pretty awesome. Yeah.
It is, and it really, when you find support of other people that have similar situations, whether it's bereavement or drug abuse or alcohol abuse, it helps knowing that you're not alone. It helps that others care.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's why support groups work.
Absolutely.
Right? Because
everybody's
kind of in the same situation.
And I have to give a shout out to Gloria LeBeau, who's the head social worker who ran that group, because she really made it helpful.
Pleasant.
To move on, especially since I lost my parents 6 months apart. So that was twice as hard.
Wow. Yeah, that's
twice people
as hard.
Lost. But yeah, but the fortunate thing, I got to say goodbye in a way, but other people were not that lucky.
Exactly. So you mentioned something that Ted and I have had experts on, and, you know, we constantly preach. And it's like it's networking, right? So I guess, grow your business or seek out your networking groups? And especially one of the things Ted and I have touched on since we started was during the pandemic, is how do you do that now when you can't meet people in person or contact is limited?
Absolutely. I mean, I had a lot of contact with my synagogue where I was, and that changed dramatically. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, there was, who would have thought of Zoom and FaceTime would be so popular at this time. And networking online.
And how do you do that?
I found something online called Connect.
Mm-hmm.
And I found them on meetup.com, but I couldn't make a meeting. But they had a weekly... daily a Zoom at noon, and I found them. I turned into them every day, half an hour. And then 2 months later, the owner, Chris Gentruli, spoke to me about joining. And I told him that I was hesitant because I didn't have a business. I was starting a business. And I didn't have a great turnout when I was in another networking group, BNI. But he said, well, it's better to have people behind your back and support you and ask, and there for advice than to do it on your own. That was the last thing he said. And that's what made me join the group. And it's been very rewarding ever since.
Oh, very cool.
So I do hear a phone in the background.
Sorry?
Is that someone needing assistance?
Right, that's someone wanting to network with them. Right.
Uh-huh.
It could be. Actually, if you find, you know, when being during the pandemic, you find a lot of things online, a lot of groups online to find and to search out. I never thought I would do before the pandemic.
Right.
So much time alone on
right?
the computer, on the iPad. No, resources mm-hmm. and articles. If it wasn't for the research, I wouldn't have found the Alliance for Professional Health Advocates and other associations across the country.
Right. Now, you also spoke somewhere, right? Didn't you do a
yes,
speaking?
Yes, I did.
So
well,
you have, can
I
you
did because,
tell
well, I did a couple of engagements. One, well, I used to work for LifeWatch, which was a medical alert company. I did
uh-huh.
that from 2008 to 2011. I did a lot of talks on safety in the home and what the purpose,
mm-hmm.
how a medical alert device can help someone who lives at home alone, who might
mm-hmm.
be afraid of falling, might be afraid of burglar, or maybe they need help, medical help,
mm-hmm.
right away. But I did talk on those, but most recently I did a talk on senior, and I affected. I did talk to the JCC, the
mm-hmm.
a traumatic brain injury group, on being one's own advocate and five steps to taking charge to being one's own advocate to better and safer healthcare. And I'm doing another talk in January at my synagogue on particularly senior safety at home, tips to be safe at home in bathrooms, the living room, the kitchen, what to look out for, what not to look out for, and how to take care of yourself, how to be your own advocate.
That's pretty awesome. Right.
Yeah.
That's really awesome.
So, you know, it's important because, like, to have
right.
So you want to have someone speak for you if you can't speak for yourself, especially, heaven forbid, you're on a ventilator, which so many people were during this time. You know, having your medications organized, having your medical history, having your doctor's information readily available, whether it's on paper or on your smartphone or on a
right.
computer that you could print, that readily accessible, making a list of questions that you want to ask, because doctors' times goes by very fast. They don't always have a lot of time.
Right, exactly. Or at least, you know, a number to contact in your wallet at all times.
Right. Yes. Definitely.
You know,
or,
that's
or,
hugely
or,
important.
And if you're home, important numbers to have, like a magnet on the refrigerator.
Right.
Numbers to call. Not only medical,
yeah,
in case of an emergency, what family members.
Mm-hmm. Right. Hugely important.
Absolutely.
Hmm. So in terms of, I guess, running your own business, is there anything that you'd want to share with our listeners or suggest or, you know, to help
don't rush.
Them?
Take people have told me to embrace the process. And when the time is right, the time is right. Don't try
mm-hmm.
to rush things. Don't try to do the best things possible. And it may not
mm-hmm.
happen perfectly, like, opening up a present or putting a bow on a top. But, you know, certain steps you have to take. Don't look at the big picture. Break it down. For example, I wrote a business plan, and I developed a letter. I developed a flyer,
mm-hmm.
business card. Then I did the web. And then what you have to do now is make a website.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm fortunate I did. And then you have to network. And then hopefully
right.
you get enough business, you can incorporate and get the right insurance
mm-hmm.
and the right staff in place and grow. But definitely.
Right, exactly.
I don't think of myself as, I used to thought I was never going to make it. I wasn't going to fail. But over the last 7 months during this pandemic, I think it really develops over time, because starting a business alone and on your own is not easy, especially after having worked for Winthrop Hospital, Parker Jewish, several Medicaid, Medicare HMOs over the last 15 years, and the medical alert company, and what I'm doing now, freelancing. But so starting it does take time. and a lot of diligence and a lot of planning.
Awesome. So that was my next question that I was going to ask you. So when you have, so I do a Monday morning motivation with a design coach. Her name is Salima Mandani. We've had her on our show. And one of the things that she and I talk about consistently is the gremlins that get in your head, right? So like you really
yes.
kind of touched on it when you started, like, I can't do this. Am I going to be successful? You know, all of those negative self-doubt thoughts. So,
yes.
And of course, as a patient advocate, when you're dealing with doctors and they're telling you, you don't know what you're talking about, I'm the expert, I should be, you know, I'm the one who's giving the medications, not you, those little gremlins really creep in.
They
so
do.
What
and
do
that's
you,
why it's
right,
very important. Well, I'm glad you agree, Lori. Very important to do self-motivation and
mm-hmm.
have, you know, things to look at or listen to.
Mm-hmm.
For example, when I get up in the morning, I say the same thing, 10 affirmations. I'm happy, I'm healthy, I feel terrific, 7 times.
Well,
and then I look at the rules of life. You know, let it go, ignore things, give it time, try not to compare, stay calm. It's on you, and the most important thing is smile.
And smile. What does smiling do?
Instead of frowning. It'll give you a laugh or two in the morning.
That it could do.
It takes less facial muscles.
Right. So
that's
Ted, you're
a the other, you know what? The other, my other motivation that I should mention is there was a sports, actually two sportscasters, Jim Valvano and Steve Scott, who I was listening to it the other day at the ESPY Awards. He spoke about he had cancer. And whatever you do, don't give up. Don't ever give up. Those are 7
mm-hmm.
powerful words to live by. The other inspiration that I had was Jim Abbott, who was a one-handed pitcher. The New York Yankees. So I think if he can be successful eventually, so could I.
Yeah.
That is impressive.
Right, why not?
Right.
If he could pitch a no-hitter for the, well, I'm prejudiced because I'm in New York, the New York Yankees. So he'd be successful. Sorry to all the Mets fans out there.
So, Ted, you're a coach. You're a business coach, right? So
right.
Have you ever coached any other patient advocates? Because I think Mark's a career, like for that, right? It's a career, is unique.
Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely.
It sounds like
so
it. Absolutely.
Yeah, so I'm just wondering if there are similarities in other business owners. If this is unique in terms of anyone you've coached as well, you know, any, I guess, supporting
well,
words
one of,
or
a big part of, and it's when I say it, people always find it counterintuitive. If you're a leader, especially if you're the CEO, a big part of your job is to intentionally create problems. And I don't mean walking around with a white glove and saying the desk is dirty. It's like the Steve Jobs problems. Like, we're going to create this device that makes the Walkman obsolete. And outcomes you have an iPod. And, you know, how you got there is, this, you know, Steve Jobs created a problem for the organization to solve. And once they solved that one, he said, okay, now we're going to turn it into a cell phone. And that's another problem to solve. So in that capacity, you're actually using obstacles as an impetus to energize your team and give them what people would say, stretching them outside of their comfort zone and causing them to be and do things that they normally wouldn't do. So, you know, obstacles, chaos, disruption, problems, if it's orchestrated and you know how to navigate people through it, can be very healthy for people. You talked about death, Mark. Sometimes death in a family can have that same kind of impact on a family and bringing them together, like galvanizing them as a team. And I understand on some cases it can pull people apart, especially if they are fighting over money. But certain unfortunate circumstances and obstacles tend to pull the best out of people. So, you know, in my capacity of working, that's a big part of it. So it sounds like, Mark, you have experience, you know, some of these things you probably wouldn't wish on anyone, except they help develop you into who you are by being able to navigate through those obstacles. And it would seem like it would give you a mindset where certain things that completely disrupt others for you, it's like, I've seen much more than this.
Certainly the latter. I think if I haven't experienced the obstacles and the pain of losing a parent, as well as my own personal experiences, time of getting over, you know, the loss, I don't think I would have found the passion and the drive to be an advocate and to successfully help others in their journey. I think you definitely have to something has to happen in one's own life to steer that direction for people.
And to have that kind of compassion for others, like you know what it's going through.
Definitely.
You know what it's like to go through that. So it's not a what people would say is a theoretical conversation. It's, you know what it's like to sit in that seat, even if it's not the same exact situation. Like you have the
correct
kind of empathy, right?
Yes, empathy, compassion, caring attitude. I call it personal caring service.
Okay.
You really need that. Not only in healthcare, but to relate to people. I think people need
exactly
to see your experiences before the actual profession sometimes, and know what the path that you've taken to get to where I am today.
Right, it's almost like what you do is serve as a tour guide. And I know that's probably not the best word, but you know, a tour guide in the sense of taking people on a journey, and you know your way around obstacles.
Right. Well, that's why I say, I believe on my website and in my flyer, I help people navigate their own health journey. I aim to provide good help for good health, so they continue to strive to achieve and get better.
Okay. So, any thoughts on how people can navigate our current world pandemic?
Yes, stay safe. Wear a mask if you're outside. Wash your hands when you come inside. Make sure that when you go to the doctors, make sure that the healthcare professionals wash their own hands and take care of themselves. If you're sick, don't go out. Stay in. And hopefully the vaccine will be available soon.
Okay.
But on the other hand, also I should add, if you are feeling sick, don't wait. If you have symptoms,
right,
whether it is, reach out to your own doctor or a medical professional.
Well, what about the people who are like feeling perfectly healthy and they feel trapped? Like this is just an obstacle. It has turned their life upside down. They don't have access to certain people, like, or their company, people who work in restaurants, some of those restaurants no longer exist.
Right. You know, particularly in the restaurant industry, which has really taken a hit over the last 9 months, they should reach, especially the servers and the owners, they should reach out to their colleagues, see if there's a way they could, you know, support each other, especially during this time. Or even people who, you know, want to go out to eat, you know, have them do takeout. Anything, small little gestures can go a long way, each other out. And when you help each other out, it's better than helping yourself out. It's a much better feeling.
Good advice, good advice. And I know one of the things that they say is about support structure, reaching out to people that normally you do, and especially people that you normally don't remain in communication with, because that seems to be a big part of helping you work through the many obstacles, is that support structure.
Absolutely. And actually, it also came from my synagogue. The rabbi developed a phone tree to make sure they were okay, since we weren't going to services on a daily and weekly basis. So if people can do that, not only in their own families, but their own circle of friends, it doesn't take too much to reach out, pick up the phone, and call someone. I think that used to be a slogan at one point.
Yes,
it was. Something about reach out.
All that silence, come on.
Right. What commercial was that?
So maybe you didn't hear me. AT&T. Wasn't AT&T reach out and touch someone?
Maybe it was. Yeah, I remember it.
But I think
I just remember
right, now
what
I'm
commercial.
I'm definitely dating myself.
Yeah, you're 100. We won't tell anybody.
AT&T, what are you talking about? I thought everyone had cell phones all their life. What are you talking about? AT&T?
Right. Well, there's still AT&T.
There's still AT&T.
Oh,
right.
Right.
Sprint and some little guys.
So, yeah, some of us still have the home phone.
Yes.
So
landline.
If any of our listeners have questions for Mark, please feel free to call in 516-387-1640. And Mark, if you want to tell people how to get a hold of you, and we'll, of course, when we close, we'll ask you again, but right now I think it would be
sure.
A great time.
Well, I'll give you the website is onthemarkadvocate.com. That's on the mark with a C, advocate.com, one word. Email is mark@onthemarkadvocate.com. And they can also reach me on my direct number is 516-749-6135.
Perfect.
I'm
very
glad
good.
You think so.
So, Mark, you're a little bit of a why there. So, do you want to give, I guess, maybe a case study or some example of, you know, how you've navigated or helped somebody?
Sure. There's a couple of ways that I've done that or that I could do in the future. After I started, before I decided to become an advocate, I was volunteering for Marker Jewish Institute. They have a program called Willing Hearts, Helpful Hands Program, which is people who have early onset dementia. And what you do is you spend time with the person once a week. So that's mostly for respite for the caregiver. And it helps the person not feel as isolated and spend time with them, help them reminisce about things, go through the newspaper, go through trivia games or history. So that was one example that I started. About a year after my mom passed, and I was doing it until COVID. But it helps. It helped not only helps the individual, but it helps the caregiver as well. Another example was when someone needed help going to a doctor's appointment. They were having an MRI done, and they needed a ride, and they wanted follow up to their specialist, and he wanted me to call the specialist to make sure that the primary got the report. So I was able to do that.
So I would imagine that's great for people who are, say, in Florida and their parents are here in New York. or they have a family right. member here in New York that needs some assistance, and you would be a great person to speak to the doctors and knowledgeable and take the patient.
Absolutely. And the reverse can be true in the wintertime. I'll go to Florida for a couple of months. I'll be a snowbird.
What a rough life.
Not yet, but soon. But no, but that's a really good point you raise, because a lot of children of elderly parents don't live so close. And they might, we all have busy lives. They may need help getting a prescription, medication approved by their insurance carrier. Or they may need a call into the doctor because they're not feeling well and the doctor's not getting back to them.
Exactly. No, it's great. What a service.
Yeah. Or they may need, the family member might need help, the family elderly family member in the hospital at some point. Or
especially
home.
Now
nursing
with COVID.
It's a little harder now because the nursing homes and facilities are not letting guests in. But there's always
would you be considered a guest or would
them.
You be considered an expert? Mark?
Yes, sir, an expert. Yeah, I'm thinking about that.
Right, because
if
you have a loved one in the hospital with a heart attack and you can't go into the hospital because of COVID, would they be able to send you in?
I don't know if they would let in because they're not letting family in, and I'm not a medical professional.
Right. Okay.
So I'd have to research that.
Okay. That would be interesting.
Yeah.
That would be very, because, especially as someone not trained in the medical field, you want to know what's going on.
Right, and that's where, the cell phones come in.
Mm-hmm.
Get in touch with them to make sure that they don't feel alone. Right.
Yeah.
It's a tricky situation, especially during COVID.
Right. Is there a form that you have for HIPAA, and how could someone out of state access it? Or I guess you could just email it to them, right?
I could email to them. Every state has their own forms. You could download it, and then they could sign it. Complete it and sign it and give it to the doctor or the specialist. Let them know that I'm able to, that they're able to release the information to me and they're able to talk to me.
Okay. Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's
awesome. The same, but there are a lot of states have their own advanced directives. So it's important to go to every state's website.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go to the hospital, you get
cool.
a form as well. Make sure. It's also good to download
right.
it before you go in.
Hey, Mark, I'm going to switch gears a bit. If you were looking to expand your business and hire, you have too many requests for your services and you just can't get to everyone, and you had to bring on two more people to do, you'd have to replicate yourself in two others. What would you look for from those people to be qualified to have that kind of touch that you have?
Similar experiences and backgrounds.
What do you mean? What do you mean?
First of all, knowledge of the healthcare system. I think that's important to know, insurance, their own hospital, how to navigate through their insurance.
Right, that's
HMO
that's the technical side. Right.
Or
that,
a commercial
that's
carrier.
That's, in a way, that's the technical aspect. But to ensure that they give the same sort of quality that you give, what would you look for in a person?
Someone with experience in their own healthcare journey that has obstacles to overcome. And things to achieve.
Okay.
And a basis of understanding and a goal. A goal-oriented and really focused on providing excellent care and excellent service to the patients.
Okay. So you'd be looking for someone who's gone through some tough times or just had a couple, because everyone's had obstacles in their life.
Right, right. But you know, challenges that they could relate to, that they could talk to someone about and empathize with. And, you know, when someone gets a diagnosis, they're very overwhelmed. They don't know where to turn. And you need someone that really understands, has compassion, and can relate to their frustration, their fears, their nervousness, and has the knowledge to deal with various issues, or is resourceful enough to reach out to others. There's one thing that other advocates do, we'll reach out to other people, to other fellow advocates.
What do you mean?
And ask questions and advise.
What do you mean by that?
If someone is too, like you just said, someone's too busy to handle a case, they may reach out to myself, look into it and follow up.
Oh, interesting.
They may have a They may have a question or two that on a certain area of insurance or specialty, special medical supply or home health contact that they don't know about, so they might ask my expertise.
Okay.
Or all if right. it's having, I also work with a lot of group homes, special needs population. So they may call me on for that input and guidance.
Okay. Interesting. So you would look for someone who's, is it fair to say someone who's had some pretty drastic obstacles in their life, not just someone who's had, you know, they just had some tough times, but
yeah, it could be tough times, but they've overcome it and they're ready to be focused and help others.
Okay.
They really have a picture, a sense of what it's like and what they've been through and what others might be going through. The patient may not have insurance and they might be worried about their insurance.
Right.
It's handling situations that don't always appear so simple. It could be, may not apply for an advocate, but some people are going to be worried about losing their housing. How are you going to deal with it? What are you going to do to help that person?
What if someone hasn't had a lot of obstacles, except they're really good at solving problems?
Would I consider that, or...
Yes.
Yeah. They're very good at solving problems. You know, it's always good to have a second set of eyes to look at various issues. So I would definitely consider it when that time comes that I'm overwhelmed.
Right.
Maybe that won't be that far in the, down the road.
Well, I'm asking, if someone who hasn't really had any health obstacles, they understand the healthcare system, they haven't had real tragedy in their life, but they're pretty good at solving problems. Or do you think someone like that could perform with the level of care you have if they're just really good at solving problems and haven't had any personal obstacles?
I think they would have to have some sort of experience or take some classes in the healthcare system so they understand. And then
They do understand that. What I'm saying is they haven't had any real personal tragedy or obstacles.
I think that last one, the personal tragedy and obstacles helps the advocate, for example, me, guide the individual. But as you said, if one's busy, you may need a second set of eyes. Do some research, find more information. Someone reliable, someone caring, someone personable,
okay.
Good people skills.
So just being a problem solver, isn't it? Someone who says, hey, I'm a great problem solver. Give me a problem, I'll solve it.
I think that's a good start, but I think there's more. Just to be a good advocate. A lot of steps involved. A lot of pieces of the puzzle that are part of being a good advocate. So But being a problem solver is very good.
But having that personal experience, you think having that personal experience with some sort of either tragedy you've gone through or a close family member and you were intimately involved.
And some other advocates come from a clinical background. So they have that experience, whether it be a social worker or a nurse background. I think that's has some sort of experience in the healthcare, working in the healthcare field. I think that's also.
And they've seen enough war stories.
Yeah. And they're tired of working, for a hospital or a clinic or something, and they want to try to go out on their own. Because there are a lot of advocates in nursing homes and in hospitals, but their allegiance is not necessarily to the patient. Their allegiance to the hospital. Independent advocates, the allegiance is directly to the family and to the patient, making sure they get the care, that we listen to their needs and their desires, so they have the best possible outcomes.
Okay.
So before we close up, I guess, what are some of the obstacles that you've encountered, I guess, in starting your own business, besides the gremlins and, navigating whether you want to be an LLC or any of that?
It's also financial challenges, coming until you get going, limited resources.
Right.
I also think
a
good resource. Getting the business plan in place, and also getting my name out, getting one's name out, so that they a key thing in starting a business is building and establishing relationships, and getting to know the person so that they trust you.
Right.
So if you do a good enough job, they'll refer you to other people.
Mm-hmm. And you would talk, you had said financial. Have you worked with the SBA or any of the small business lenders?
Farmingdale Small Business Development Center. They've helped with the business plan, and they've offered resources, for getting some administrative help and developing the plan and offering other lenders that are available in New York.
So you would suggest your local college?
Correct.
Right, because they usually have the small business.
I know Farmingdale College has it. I know the city has the Small Business Administration. I know in Queens there's the Queens Economic Development Corporation.
Mm-hmm. Have you heard of SCORE?
Yeah, I think that's in the city as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I'm thinking other cities or countries, I don't know about countries, but definitely other cities would have SCORE for mentoring.
Right. Or other Small Business Administration from their local.
Mm-hmm.
They could, I know in New York they have one-stop centers, Hempstead Works. I don't know about other localities.
What about you, Ted, in Jersey? Ted, did we lose you?
No. You mean for the SBA?
Well, I'm just thinking in terms of resources for new businesses. Like SCORE would be mentoring. The Small Business Administration would probably have places set up in local colleges. Do you have any other suggestions?
I've gone to SCORE at Rutgers. You have SBA. I'm just curious, Mark. Do you are you qualified as disadvantaged? Are you qualified at disadvantage in any way? Are you categorized as that?
I am not categorized as that. That's a good thing to look into. I have to follow up on that, but I haven't looked into that, but. Definitely qualify as a person with a disability.
Right, exactly. I would assume. Right.
I should definitely try to look into that.
Yeah, there should be some programs that would definitely support you in that because of that. And they may even see you as an inspiration for others. So there may be other doors
actually,
that can open up for you.
Especially with United Cerebral Palsy, since that's what my main condition is. So that might be the best place to start first, as well as other disability
sources. I think
that's
a great suggestion, Ted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, like
small
business women, business owners.
That was very good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Ted's my brilliant half.
I
know. How come you didn't think of it first, Lori?
I'm not a business person.
Okay.
I am a small business owner, but I'm not a business person. I keep Ted in my life.
Finally, I serve the purpose, man. I finally
you
found my mission in life.
You did. Business coaching 101.
But,
for sure.
Yeah, I go ahead. What were you saying? I was just going to say, I think there are possible doors that could open up for you, Mark. And people, because we were talking about support, you know, having support, and I think you could find additional support in those areas. And if you're listed as handicapped or anything like that, the country, the whole country is set up to support you.
Right. Actually, you just mentioned something since you said that. I joined a board last month of a place called Destination Accessible, which is an online resource for people with mobility challenges, helping provide a reference of what places are accessible, whether it be restaurants, movies, parks, recreation, museums. So
okay.
She found me during COVID and been as well very rewarding to be a part of something like that.
Very cool.
That's awesome.
Wow.
Yeah. So we have two minutes left.
Okay.
Go ahead. Sorry, Mark. Go ahead.
Oh, that's okay. No, I was going to say it's a nice way to – I did a lot of work on the Americans with Disabilities Act and my undergrad at American. So this is a nice way to get back into that area.
Oh, very awesome. You are inspiring for sure.
Thank you.
For sure. And I thank you for being a guest with us, sharing your expertise
thank you
and your knowledge.
Having me.
Yeah, and if people want to get a hold of you, how do they reach you?
The website is onthemarkadvocate.com, one word. That's Mark with a C. My email is mark@onthemarkadvocate.com. And the direct phone number is 516-749-6135.
Awesome. So, Ted, thank you.
Always a pleasure to be here. And thank you, Mark. Thank you, Lori.
Thank you, Ted. Thank you, Lori. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, everyone. And I guess we'll see everyone next week, Thursday night.
Yes.
7 o'clock.
See you then.
Thank you.
Have
a great night, everybody. And if you're celebrating, happy Hanukkah.
Happy Hanukkah.
That's right. Take care. Bye.
Take good care.
Good night.